Hi, friends, and welcome to Reading Jewish History in the Parsha, where every week we try to share an idea in the Parsha through the lens of Jewish history that I've explored through my Shabbos readings, articles, books that I try to read each and every Shabbos. Thank you so much to our sponsors, Janet and Lior Hode and family, with immense gratitude to Hashem. I am so grateful for your partnership and support. The first Jewish dreamer, is Yaakov Avinu, our forefather, that we read in this week's Parsha, Parshas Vayetze. And I specifically say first Jewish dream because there is one earlier instance of a dream recorded in the Torah, namely in the story of Avimelech. That is the first dream that we have in the Torah where HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God warns him about taking Sarah captive. But in that first dream, which is interesting, he's really a non-Jewish king. Many of the Mefarshim, the commentaries, point out that it is understandable why his warning specifically came through a dream, because Avimelech did not have the religious stature to have true prophecy. You can look at the Ibn Ezra, the Sforno, they both make similar points. Avimelech's dreams, and this is what the Ibn Ezra says, was really for Avraham's honor. This was not because Avimelech had any stature. Yaakov Avinu, in our Parsha, is the first to introduce us to the notion of a Jewish dream. And in his vision, of course, the proverbial stairway to heaven, Yaakov sees a ladder stretching out to the heavens upon which angels ascend and descend, Malachim Olim V'Yordimbo. Interestingly, the vision he sees within his dream contains, drumroll please, a hapax legomenon. A what? Yes, you heard me correctly. Don't adjust your volume. A hapax legomenon, one of my absolutely favorite words, and you know I've been waiting to use this term. What is a hapax legomenon? A hapax legomenon is a word that only appears once throughout the entire Torah, the entire Tanakh, meaning it only appears once, so you really don't know how to translate it. You have no other context to compare it to. And perhaps one of the best known examples appears in Yaakov's dream, and it's probably one of the most famous hapax legomenons, and that is the word sulam, a ladder. That's normally how it's translated. This word only appears here, certainly attesting to its significance within the dream. Before I go further, I have to make a quick disclaimer. I am not nearly scholarly enough to use the word hapax legomenon casually in conversation. I truly wish I was. My former colleague, we worked together for many years, Rachel First Olson, taught me this term, no doubt a testament to the scholarship of her incredible father, Mitchell First. Mitchell First is a wonderful friend. He has incredible books, Unmasking Esther. He writes frequently for Chakira. And seriously, Mitchell's scholarship on biblical language, on the language of the Torah, is a must read. He created an old controversy. I don't know if any of our listeners will remember. There's an old controversy in one of my Mishpacha columns when I wrote the top five column for Mishpacha magazine. And I wrote about the meaning of the word Mechila. And I mentioned that the word Mechila does not appear in the Torah, which created a firestorm in the letter section of Mishpacha magazine. We don't need to recount all of that now. Maybe we'll get to it in a different shir. But the person who informed me about the meaning of the word Mechila, the fact that Mechila does not appear in the Torah, which is more of a controversy than I had originally anticipated. The Maral Diskin writes about it, and Rav Yaakov Emden writes about it. But that's not for now. But all of that is really based on the phenomenal scholarship on Mitchell First. So shout out to him and his incredible daughter for teaching me this wonderful, endearing term, hapax legomenon, which appears in our parsha because of the word sulam, which appears nowhere else in the entire Torah. And that really leads us to the question, why is Yaakov's vision the first dream experienced by a Jew? And secondly, what is the significance of the word ladder? It's the only time that it appears in the entire Torah. Why is this central word? It's the only time it appears. Why is it so central to the nature and understanding of this dream? To understand all of this, let us explore the first academic exploration of dreams, a famous Jew with a famously complicated relationship to Judaism. Yes, I'm referring to Dr. Sigmund Freud. I'd like to explore his role and specifically his work on dreams a little bit now. Of course, Sigmund Freud had a very complicated relationship with his Jewish identity. Further complicating matters is that many biographers have deliberately downplayed Freud's Jewish identity in order to distance psychoanalysis, which Freud was, of course, the the founder of from its Jewish roots. One of his biographies is actually entitled Godless Jew. It's a phrase that Freud once used to describe himself, and Freud himself was pretty self-conscious about conflating his Jewish roots with what he hoped would be the acceptance of the practice of psychoanalysis in the wider scientific community. He didn't want it dismissed, as it was specifically in Nazi Germany, as a Jewish science. That description, however, even though he used it about himself being a godless Jew, is really quite superficial. Freud's relationship with Judaism undoubtedly evolved over the course of his life. There is a wonderful author who has examined this incredibly closely named Moshe Gresser, and he has an article that he published in Modern Judaism, and of course we have the links to all of these articles in our weekly Substack, Reading Jewish History in the Parsha.substack.com. And in that article in Modern Judaism, entitled Sigmund Freud's Jewish Identity, Evidence from His Correspondence, as well as, he later wrote an entire book on this called Dual Allegiance, Freud as a Modern Jew. Freud's religious life can be divided up into different stages. He divides it up into three different stages. First, a lot of distance, then ambivalence, he's like kind of questioning, and then really a quiet embrace at the very end. It took an entire lifetime for Freud to figure out the role that Judaism played in his life, and even then, he still struggled. Freud's father's name was actually Yaakov, like the first Jewish dreamer, Yaakov Avinu, and he came from a Hasidic family. Although his father, Yaakov, did lapse a little bit in practice, he always remained connected to Torah learning. On his son Sigmund's 35th birthday, he actually bought him a chumash, and in Yaakov Freud's moving poetic Hebrew inscription to his son, Shlomo, or Sigmund, he addressed it to his son's Hebrew name, Shlomo Freud, he writes something incredibly beautiful. Now, you want to read the phenomenal book by Yosef Chaim Yerushalmi called Freud's Moses, which actually is an entire book just examining the inscription that Yaakov Freud writes to his son, Shlomo, otherwise known, aka Sigmund Freud. It's written beautifully in this beautiful poetic Hebrew. You can see he's somebody who really has a grasp of Torah literature. And one of the things that he writes in there, it's quite beautiful, Min az haya hasefer kamos kishivrei luchos ba'aron imadi. Until now, he tells his sons, this book was like the fragments of the luchos in the Ark of the Covenant with me, and now I am giving it to you to nurture and to bring into your life. I have no doubt that we're going to return to this inscription in a later shiur, in a later class, in a later Substack in Reading Jewish History in the Parsha, but for now you should know that he undoubtedly came from a learned home. His father Yaakov was someone who can write not just in Hebrew, but a beautiful biblical poetic Hebrew. Freud eventually married Martha Bernays, who was the granddaughter of Chacham Isaac Bernays, who was the chief rabbi of Hamburg. Professor Schneer Lyman, who wrote a beautiful article called Rabbinic Responses to Modernity, and I'll just note to our listeners, if anybody has a connection to Schneer Lyman, actually notified his nephew about this. He has a wonderful website called a Lyman Library. Unfortunately, the website is not live right now. They're having some issues, but he has so much of his writings are available to have online. And over there, he actually writes about Chacham Isaac Bernays, Freud's grandfather-in-law, and the contribution that he was really a precursor to modern Orthodoxy. He was a very serious Rav and Talmud Chacham. Interestingly, this would not be the last intersection between the Bernays and the Freud family. The modern founder of public relations, any of our listeners who are in PR, all of public relations, the founder of public relations is somebody named Edward Bernays, who was the child of Sigmund Freud's sister Anna. That's Sigmund Freud's nephew, was Edward Bernays. Freud's sister Anna actually married Eli Bernays, and that was Freud's brother-in-law. So the family was intersected. It does not take a Freudian psychologist to see the psychoanalytic roots within the discipline of PR. It's basically talk therapy for corporations. Freud's first major work outlining the principles of psychotherapy was his 1899 book. And that book, of course, is The Interpretation of Dreams. And there, Sigmund Freud introduces the concept of the unconscious and how it can be accessed and interpreted through the analysis of dreams. Echoes of Jewish ideas within Freud's theory of the unconscious and dreams were not lost on later scholars. There's someone named Dana Beth Wasserman who wrote a wonderful dissertation called Hasidic Antecedents to the Psychoanalytic Theory of Sigmund Freud. Freud. And she writes, Freud paradoxically utilized his Jewish and Hasidic roots through denial and concealment. He doesn't talk about them overtly or explicitly. The biographical and textual analysis presented in my dissertation indicate that Freud extracted various interpretive techniques from Jewish and specific Hasidic religious texts by shielding his methods and their sources from the reader, and perhaps, she suggests, even himself. Freud endeavored to unveil the nature and function of dreams that ultimately transcended religion in its myriad forms. When the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rav Shalom Dov Ber Schneerson, also known as the Rebbe Rashab, experienced unexplained numbness in his hand, he actually consulted directly with Sigmund Freud. He made the trip to consult with Sigmund Freud. The enduring power of the unconscious to shape our lives was a central point of their meeting. Freud reportedly told the Rashab that the head grasps what the heart is unable to contain, and the heart cannot assimilate what your mind comprehends. Essentially, that we sometimes have these unconscious feelings that cannot be fully grasped by our mind. Sometimes we have ideas that cannot be fully assimilated into our heart, but they bubble and bounce around in our subconscious. You can read much more about this in a phenomenal work, which really goes in depth. The best part of the book is recounting the story and the scholarship around Freud's meeting with the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rebbe Rashab, and that is Joseph H. Burke's The Hidden Freud, His Hasidic Roots, which explores deeply subconscious Hasidic roots within Freud's theories. For most of Freud's life, his Judaism remained exactly that, unconscious. One issue which awakened his Jewish soul, actually, was Zionism, something that we are still seeing today, that the pull of Amcha Yisrael, of the Jewish people, all joining together and being together, really pulls and awakens the parts of our Jewish soul that may previously have remained dormant or even unconscious. When Freud first published The Interpretation of Dreams, he sent a copy to none other than Theodor Herzl. He wrote to Herzl as a token of the high esteem in which I, like so many others, have for many years regarded the poet and the fighter for the human rights of our people, namely the Jewish people. Freud wrote that to Herzl in 1902. Freud later had a dream, this is wild, where Herzl appeared to him pleading something must be done to save the Jewish people. When the Balfour Declaration was announced, Freud was thrilled that Yerushalayim, Jerusalem, may finally be with, quote, the chosen people. He was excited about this. Freud's Jewish identity continued to echo throughout his life. In May of 1931, David, I am going to butcher this last name like no one's business, Rabbi David Feuchtwang, he was the chief rabbi in Vienna. Please dial in, email me back how to pronounce that last name. He was the chief rabbi of Vienna, who reached out and sent Sigmund Freud happy 75th birthday wishes. Freud's response is, wow, one of his most telling pieces of correspondence. Again, you can read about Freud's correspondence in that wonderful article in Modern Judaism by Moshe Gresser, Sigmund Freud's Jewish Identity, evidence from his correspondence. And Freud's response is incredible. This is what Freud responded back to the chief rabbi of Vienna. He was an Orthodox rabbi. Your words aroused a special echo in me, which I do not need to explain to you. In some place in my soul, in a very hidden corner, I am a fanatical Jew. I am very much astonished to discover myself as such, in spite of all efforts to be unprejudiced and impartial. What can I do against it at my age? It's a feeling that I think a lot of people have grappled with at different points in their life, where deep down inside, that pintle yid, that part of our Yiddishkeit that can never be extinguished, bursts forth, despite our best efforts to ignore it, the immutability of our Jewish identity seizes hold of us. For Sigmund Freud, the shattered remnants of his faith remained, as per his father's inscriptions, like the Shivrei Luchos, the shattered remnants of the tablets destroyed by Moshe Rabbeinu, broken by Moshe Rabbeinu, they remained concealed in the ark of his heart. His very approach to dreams, many have argued, draws upon the Talmudic approach to drusha, to the hermeneutics, how we explore and derive meaning from text. Freud actually writes in his Interpretation of Dreams, the dream, indeed, is so intimately connected with verbal language that every tongue has its own dream language. Dreams are the text of our inner lives waiting to be expounded upon. The part played by words in dream formation ought not to surprise us. A word, as the point of junction of a number of ideas, possesses, as it were, a predestined ambiguity, which is very similar to how the ninth parak of Brachos, which famously explores in depth the notion of dreams in the Gemara, also has a similar way. Hakol holech achar hapeh. So much of the interpretation of dreams goes to how we extract that meaning, and there is this predestined ambiguity for how we understand dreams. Adam Kirsch, a famous literary critic who's written for the New York Times and Tablet and so many others, explores this in a fascinating article in the Jewish Review of Books entitled Freud as Talmudist. It's a really fascinating article, and Kirsch writes, in dream analysis, as in Medrash, this disparity arises because the material to be interpreted is supersaturated with meaning. Ordinarily, words mean what they say, but the unconscious, like God, operates beyond the ordinary limits of human intelligence, packing meaning into every line, every letter. Freud could say about the dream what Ben Bagbag says about the Torah in Pirkei Avos, hafachba vahafachba dekulaba, turn it and turn it, for everything is in it. Which allows us to return to the original dream of Yaakov, not Yaakov Freud, but the dreamer in our parsha, Yaakov Avinu. Every Jew, Rav Chaim Volozhin writes in Nefesh HaChaim, is comparable to the ladder that Yaakov saw in his dream. Our actions in this world extend upwards into Shemayim, into the heavens, affecting those lofty, transcendent, supernal worlds. And even though we don't see it in front of us when we act and when we do things, the impact of our actions extends to the heavens. And that is how he interprets the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which says, Da ma lamala mimcha, which plainly means be a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Know that God is above you. Da malam alam imcha. Know that God is above you. And this too, Rav Chaim Volozhin interprets through the lens of a ladder. Know that what is above you, in the heavenly words, Da malam ala, know that what is above, mimcha, is from you. Hakol mimcha hu, he writes in Nefesh HaChaim, in a Haggah, in an annotation. Hakol mimcha hu al pi ma'asecha la'an notim. Everything in this world is a reaction of our specific impact. Know that what is above in the heavenly worlds is a product of you and your actions. A ladder, like our actions, extends upwards. But as Yaakov's dream makes clear, ladders is also how we plummet to our own depths. The angel in Yaakov's dreams moved up and down on the ladder. Upwards movement, like the Nefesh HaChaim explains, is a reminder of the spiritual import of our actions. We can reach the heavens. But what about the downwards movement? Which brings us to a different work that came out the exact same year as the copywriters, the Interpretation of Dreams. In 1900, the year after Freud published his Interpretations of Dreams, Rav Tzadok HaKohen Milublin passed away. Now, longtime listeners to me know my relationship fascination, and I feel like a student of Rav Tzadok in many ways. We'll talk about him many, many times, but what I want to discuss specifically, because there's so much to discuss, is Rav Tzadok's relationships to dreams. Rav Tzadok took dreams very seriously. He wrote an entire kuntres, which I believe can be found in the back of Rasisei Laila, called Kuntres Divrei Chalomos, where Rav Tzadok records his own dreams. And in fact, if you read his third dream, Rav Tzadok writes explicitly that the roots of my soul were revealed to me in a dream while I was in the Hasidic court of Ishbitz. And there's just fascinating stuff in those dreams. He has a dream about whether or not a golem could be counted for a minion. I think his 27th dream talks about why Olam Haba wasn't written explicitly in the Torah. His dreams are jaw-droppingly just phenomenal, eye-opening. But you clearly see in Reb Tzadok an absolute fascination with the content of dreams and interpreting the own content of his own dreams, where the only place where he says, the shorish of my neshama, the roots of my soul, were revealed to me was specifically in a dream that he had when he first came to the Hasidic court of the Ishbitzer Rebbe. In Rav Tzadok's first work on Hasidus, known as Tzidkas HaTzadik, Rav Tzadok writes, I believe, in the second paragraph, and they're numbered, each paragraph is numbered in Tzidkas HaTzadik, Rav Tzadok writes as follows, U'kamo she'shamati bazeh. Rav Tzadok very often introduces ideas saying, I heard this. Usually when he says she'shamati, that I heard this, he's usually referring to the Rebbe of Ishbitz. I believe in this case, this is not an idea specifically from Ishbitz. This actually dates back earlier to the Rebbe of the Ishbitzer. The Ishbitzer spent a little bit of time in the court of the Kutzker Rebbe. Rebbe. Then he broke off, but before he was in Kutsk, they learned all together by Reb Simcha Banim of Pshischa. And this is an idea that Reb Simcha Banim used to say. Kmosha Shamati Baza Ala Pasuk Vayachalom Yaakov Shemehachalomos Nikar Milas HaAdam. That says that Yaakov dreamed. It is from our dreams that we can see, that we can realize, that we can appreciate the values, the stature of a person. Imgam Kisheino Osa Klum, even when you're not doing anything, Rayonos of your thoughts, dare I say your subconscious, Rak Vihine Hashem Nitzavalov, that the fact that when Yaakov was dreaming, what was he dreaming about? He was dreaming about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he was dreaming about God. From a person's dreams, we can see their true values, which is why when Yaakov dreamed, he saw God, a testament to his unconscious holiness. Dreams, in this reading, are a ladder to our subconscious. This is why the word sulam, a ladder, features so prominently in the first Jewish dream in the Torah. Dreams allow us, like the Nefesh HaChaim, to ascend upwards and see the impact of our actions on earth. And like Reb Tzadok, dreams are also a ladder to descend into our inner depths and see and confront our subconscious. Like the enduring echoes that Freud heard from his Jewish roots, dreams for Reb Tzadok are a ladder to the unconscious values we hold most dear. Through our dreams, we can descend downwards and consider the very nature of our subconscious. We can hear the enduring echoes of our soul. So thank you so much for listening to Reading Jewish History in the Parsha. Please remember, you can subscribe to our Substack, readingjewishhistoryintheparsha.substack.com, where you will also get a weekly write-out of the entire shiur, along with all of the links to the books, essays, articles that I quote along the way for you to read over Shabbos or at your leisure. Thank you so much to our sponsors, our dearest friend Jana and Lior Hode and family, with immense gratitude to Hashem. I am so grateful for your partnership and friendship. Thank you so much for listening, and keep reading every single Shabbos.